politicians debate issues, and issues can change a lot depending on where you stand on them. Facts, on the other hand, are notoriously stubborn things. If you don't believe me, ask a scientist, or the whole scientific community, about evolution and human-caused climate change. Both are now widely accepted by experts. That's been true for well more than a century in evolution's case. Yet only last week, a politician in Mississippi set forth an education bill to, as he put it, bring creationism back into the debate. Today's first guest has charted this kind of rocky terrain between science and politics, and how teachers cover it in their classrooms. His latest research examines how public school teachers approach climate change with their students, and the results are anything but unified. The study is called Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers, and it's featured in the latest issue of Science Magazine. Our guest is the lead author and a professor of political science at Penn State University. Dr. Eric Plutzer, welcome to The Exchange. Dr. Plutzer, are you with us? Well, looks like we'll take just a minute here getting Dr. Plutzer back on the line. Again, the study is called Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers, and the basic premise is that a teacher's individual knowledge and values can hinder climate education. So although 95% of active climate scientists attribute recent global warming to human causes, that majority isn't quite so clear-cut once you get down to the classroom. Only about half of U.S. adults believe that human activity is the predominant cause. We're the lowest among 20 nations that were polled in 2014. All this comes out in a new article in Science Magazine this month. And Dr. Plutzer, who will be with us momentarily. Dr. Plutzer, are you back with us?
Yes, I am, Emily.
All right. Well, welcome to The Exchange. We can certainly hear you now, and we are so glad to have you here.
Well, I'm very happy to be here.
So your study, Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers, before we dig into it, I'd just like to shoo sort of a stubborn elephant out of the room here. In your mind, is there any real scientific debate going on about human-caused climate change?
No. It's very clear that the burning of fossil fuels has had an impact over the last century, up until about the early 1990s. The data were not clear enough to say conclusively that fossil fuels accounted for the observed change in average global temperatures. But by now, it is extremely clear that even though we have fluctuations from year to year, and even though certain communities may be off the trend line, that temperatures are rising. They're rising faster than they had earlier in the previous century, and that the consumption of fossil fuels is the main cause of average global temperatures going up.
So these conclusions in the scientific community have been extremely clear, as you put it, for over 20 years. This reminds me a bit of the evolution creationism debate, which you've also studied, right?
That's correct.
And so do you see the parallels there? I mean, is history repeating itself?
Well, I think there are some important differences. In the case of evolution, you can talk to creationist teachers or members of the clergy or members of the general public, and if you ask them what scientists think, most of them will say, yes, well, scientists believe in Darwinian theory and natural selection. I just choose not to accept it. In the case of climate change, the science is relatively new, and there's a great deal of confusion among many people about how settled the science actually is. And so rather than a decision based on faith that ignores evidence that you're aware of, there seems to be a lot more confusion in the case of climate change.
So people really they're not refuting something that they've been presented as true. And in many cases, they're actually presented with a debate over climate change. Those three words are actually pretty linked in my mind, debate and climate change, having grown up in the 1990s. Now, your work here discussed in Science Magazine this month, Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers, It's the first nationally representative survey of science teachers that focuses in on the issue of climate change. Can you tell us more about what the numbers were there, how you accessed people?
Yes. Well, there had been other studies before, but most of them had been local in a particular community, sometimes in a particular state. And we really didn't have a baseline about how many teachers were covering climate change and the topics that they were covering and how they were dealing with controversy. So we began with a database of several million teachers covering all 50 states and covering every type of community. And we drew a scientific random sample of close to 5,000 teachers. And then we undertook a survey based out of the Penn State Survey Research Center, where we sent out advanced letters, and then a survey packet, reminders, email reminders, and eventually generated 1,500 completed questionnaires. And the teachers that completed the survey come from all 50 states. They come from big schools, small schools, middle schools, and high schools. They come from minority communities and largely white communities, affluent communities, and poor communities. And so we feel that this is, by considerable margin, the best survey of its kind, and it serves as a kind of baseline. And hopefully in 4 or 5 years, we can follow up on this and hopefully see that things have changed and changed in a positive way.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Plutzer. He's a professor of political science at Penn State University and the lead author of Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers. Join the discussion 800-838-3760 or email us jx@jeffnet.org. We want to hear how you learned about climate change in school or what your kids or grandkids are learning today. Now, Dr. Plutzer, this survey, you started with almost 4 million teachers. You drew 5,000 names. You ended up with 1,500 completed questionnaires. What kinds of questions did you ask the teachers who completed this survey?
Well, first of all, we asked them if they devoted time to recent global warming in general, and averaging across all the topics, about 3 in 4 science teachers do spend at least 1 or 2 class periods on the topic, although most spend only 1 or 2 class periods on the topic. We then asked them what types of subjects that they covered, and teachers tended to discuss greenhouse gases, although typically not the underlying science through which greenhouse gases actually warm the planet. Most of them talked about consequences for local ecology, rising sea levels, and we were very pleased to see that a lot of teachers didn't just leave it as a sort of doom and gloom problem that could depress students, but also talked about things that students can do, both simple things like reducing energy consumption, but also about careers in conservation and engineering technologies that might help with mitigation. And so there was a wide variety of approaches that teachers took to introduce their students to the problem of recent global warming.
And when you tackle that problem, was the causation, I imagine in a survey like this, it would be hard to get at what people really think, because so often they don't, they're not willing to share that directly. They're kind of concerned about what they should think. But were you able to suss out, say, the percentage of teachers who denied the existence of human-caused climate change, or percentage of teachers that thought it's a totally human-caused thing, or maybe some mix of natural and human causes?
Yes. Towards the end of the survey, after we asked teachers about what they did in the classroom and their background, we also asked them their personal views. And only about 2% of the teachers denied that the planet is warming. Mm. But there was considerable diversity among the teachers in terms of what they thought was the main cause. About two in three teachers thought that global warming was caused mostly by human activities, but about 17% thought that global warming was caused mostly by natural changes in the environment, and another one in 10 declined to choose between the two and said that both were the main causes. There was considerable diversity in their own opinions or their own acceptance of the scientific consensus.
Let's take a call, Eric. We're talking with Dr. Eric Plutzer about climate confusion among U.S. teachers. Anne in Eugene is on the line. Anne, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. So I would like to know about a comparison between teachers in a state like Oregon that does not have any oil or coal production compared to teachers in a state where oil and coal production are one of the major sources of production there.
Thanks, Anne.
Yeah, that is a great question, Anne. Our preliminary results, and we've not published these yet, suggest that actually the differences are relatively small. I think you are right to suspect that in a community that is heavily dependent on the energy sector, that this would be a more sensitive topic. I think you're correct to assume that teachers might be a little more cautious and worry about controversy that might arise from a parent or somebody in the community. But our preliminary look suggests that that's actually not the case, that global warming is taught at a roughly the same level in all types of communities, and that the major factor is really the difference between one teacher and another, rather than from one community to the next.
One teacher to another. You know, I think some of our listeners might have a hard time believing that because the difference between school districts can be so pronounced depending on who is administrating them. We've got another caller on the line that I'd like to take now. Jake in Eureka, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Eric Plutzer.
Hello. I think most of our listeners are aware of how the oil industry, natural gas industry, and the coal industry has tried to use their funds to confuse the public on the issue of climate change. And they paid for many politicians in the Congress who also want to confuse the public. My question is, we are aware of school districts controlled by conservatives who often have tried to stop their children from learning about evolution, for instance. Are there any instances of school districts controlled by conservatives where they try to put a roadblock to adequately educating their children on the issue of climate change?
Thank you for that, Jake. Jake in Eureka. Now, Dr. Plutzer, it sounds like some of your research may be kind of nascent in terms of narrowing down the geographic differences here.
Yes. I mean, one of the important differences between a subject like evolution and one like climate change is that evolution has been a lightning rod for politicians for a very long time. And as a result, and because it's so central to a course that everyone takes in high school, that is general biology, it has received a lot of attention by those who select textbooks and those who approve state content standards and the content of high-stakes testing. Climate change is a little bit different. It sort of falls through the cracks. You can teach a little bit of it in middle school. You can teach a little bit in earth science. You can teach the radiochemistry of how greenhouse gases work in chemistry or physics. And as a result, it has not come up as a major topic in textbook selection or state content standards. And most of the teachers who are teaching it for two or three hours or even 4 or 5 hours are doing it largely on their own because it's not required in most states and their students are not going to be tested on it. As a result, I think it has been less of a lightning rod and it has drawn less attention than evolution. Now, I think this will change as more and more states adopt the next generation science standards or adopt standards that are similar it will be hard to avoid these questions. And at that point, I think what you'll see is school boards at the state and local level that are controlled by ideological conservatives will focus a lot more attention on textbooks and state curricula. But until then, it's sort of under the radar, and the teachers who are bringing this up are largely doing it on their own because they think it's important and because they think their children need to get this at least basic knowledge so that they can navigate the very complicated politics and the political rhetoric that they'll encounter once they become active citizens.
I mean, the idea that global warming and the greenhouse gas effect, these issues of a change in climate are not required standards in public education, and that sets this aside from, say, the evolution-creationism tensions. It's a very interesting one in that what is the metric for quality of instruction at this point? Your survey, drawing on, you said, 1,500 responses from over 5,000 teachers across the United States, you were able to get a sense of the quantity of instruction. How did you gauge the quality?
Well, first of all, we asked the topics that they taught. Second, we asked the teachers to tell us what topics they would give as a high priority if they were asked to do a 2 or 3 day session just on greenhouse gases and their effect on the planet. And it's there that we saw that teachers put a relatively low priority on the underlying science. Relatively few teachers thought it was a high priority to get their students to understand how greenhouse gases allow in shortwave radiation, but then trap longer wave radiation that reflects off the planet. And so without building a sort of cumulative scientific understanding, it's very difficult for those children to take their place as citizens who can, you know, look at the science and try to make judgments about its quality without resorting to what they see on the news. And the news often presents, you know, somebody from one side and somebody on the other side, and it's easy to get the impression that there's a balance in the scientific community based on the way that information is presented by modern journalists.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Plutzer. He's a professor of political science at Penn State University and lead author of a new study called Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers. A couple more minutes here for calls. Join the discussion at 800-838-3760 or email us jx@jeffnet.org. I'm Emily Curitan. Now, Dr. Eric Plutzer, you just mentioned this pressure to teach both sides or somehow frame climate change as a debate. Did you get that kind of feedback from the teachers surveyed in this national survey of how they were teaching climate change?
Yes, we did. We had a substantial number of teachers that reported to us that they do, in fact, emphasize both sides. A substantial number, at least one in three who spend time on the topic do send messages that would seem to legitimate non-scientific perspectives. A substantial number of teachers told us that they encourage their students to debate the topic and come up with their own conclusions rather than to defer to what scientists have concluded. And so we do see these mixed messages coming into the classroom. And even if teachers don't give equal time, when they give some time to non-scientific alternatives, it provides a lot of legitimacy to those views. Students tend to respect their teachers, and if the teachers bring it up in class, well, then there must be something to it. And this happened, again, in communities throughout the country.
See, we've got an anonymous email here saying, in short, climate change is best taught as a theory Can your guests speak to the fact that U.S. temperatures are back where the temperature anomaly was in 1982? America has had the most consistently measured daily temperature, and there's been almost no change since 1880. So throwing some facts out here from a listener who chose not to share their name behind the view that climate change is best taught as a theory. Would you like to respond to that, Dr. Eric Plutzer?
Yeah, so that the average global temperatures had been rising at about 0.2 of a degree Celsius for several decades. And there was a period of about 13, 14 years when the rise slowed to about half of that. But to get that number, you have to pick the beginning of that period to be the last major El Nino. And so if you start at a very high level that is anomalous compared to the years before and after, and you cherry-pick that year, it will obviously, you know, take a while to get back to that high level. So your viewers should look at long-term changes. They should not just look at the United States. They should look at average global temperatures worldwide. And if you look at the entire span over 50 years or so, it's clear that it's not a straight line, but it's also clear that once you account for El Nino effects and don't cherry pick a starting point, that temperatures are going up and continuing to go up.
So, Dr. Plutzer, with about 30 seconds to go here, we've been talking about how climate change is being taught. How should it be taught?
Well, ideally, in the middle school grades, the topic should be introduced. Students at that level can certainly understand consequences like sea level rise and the melting of polar ice caps. By 9th or 10th grade, students should be able to understand the radiochemistry. And in the later grades, students certainly should be exposed to the more complicated models and get into some of the challenges of measuring temperature and CO2 historically.
All right. We've been hearing from Dr. Eric Plutzer, professor of political science at Penn State University and lead author of a study called Climate Confusion Among U.S. Teachers. You can check it out in Science magazine this month. Dr. Plutzer, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, Emily. Happy to be here.